Merkle Media.
He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed this plane was really low. It went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I'm your host, Tony Merkle, and my dad, Brian Merkle, is not here in studio right now. We forgot to do the intro outro last week, and he wasn't coming down this week. So here I am by myself introducing the show. So if you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, you can reach us that way as well. Either works for us, just get a hold of us. And if you want to prepare for that emergency in your life, go to preparewithhll.com, that's preparewithhll.com. There you're going to get your emergency supplies and gear that will last you up to 25 years, including survival gear. We got you covered right there on preparewithhll.com. Don't waste any time for that emergency to pop up in your life. Make sure you're prepared and get yourself and your family good to go. Also, we got a voicemail line. That voicemail line number is 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-MERK or 6375. Call the voicemail line. If you got a quick hitter you want to share with us, if you got a story that happened and it's like, wow, that was crazy. Can't believe that happened. Who should I tell? Tell Hammer Lane. Call that voicemail line, 515-585-MERK-6375. Anything more than 15 minutes long, just shoot us an email and get your butt on the show. This week we have Jason coming on, and Jason is a walking celebrity among us. He has been on TV twice, two different times. He was on, I don't even remember what the TV show was called. It was Iron Something or Forged in Fire. Forged in Fire, that's what it was called. Forged in Fire. He makes knives and cool stuff like that because he's a blacksmith. And I had no idea he was on TV till we connected. And the crazy thing, well, you know what? I'll let you hear it on the show. So let's get to Jason right now. All right, today we got Jason on the show. Jason, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, today. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned, say hi, Dad.
How are you doing, Jason?
I love it. Awesome. Awesome. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Well, we were just chatting up a storm and stuff with Jason. I figured we should just hit record and see where the conversation goes. What were we talking about? I forget.
Microphones, people cutting grass.
Oh yeah,
sound quality.
So the problem with the two different shows that I record for is with Hammer Lane, because my dad's in the studio. Like with the confessionals, when I'm recording, when I'm not talking, I mute my microphone, I turn it down, and so that, you know, if there is crazy noise, whether my neighbor's mowing the lawn or plane flying around the house or my son starts pounding on the door for some reason, it's not on there. For the most part. But with Hammer Lane, because he has his microphone too, the timing of the interview process is thrown off way much. If I have to unmute mine, then unmute his, then we can start talking. It just, it sounds too awkward. And so I leave the microphones unmuted. And so when there's a, during the summertime, when somebody's mowing the lawn next door or a plane flies over the house or my son wakes up and decides to run in the dining room, which is right above us, it's like, boom, 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 boom. I'm just like.
Dude, I feel your pain. I feel your pain. I have what do I have now? Four kids left. Yeah, four kids left in the house. And two of them are 6 and 7 years old. And this big old beautiful 1900-something built house has bedrooms directly over me. And I know that sound. And right outside my window over here, we have a kind of a busy intersection for our little town. And being as I'm out here in mid-Missouri, where every hillbilly feels like the need to buy a big diesel truck and put a loud fart pipe muffler on it.
Yeah.
That they don't need, because all they're doing is hauling their butt back and forth to the grocery store. But they stand on it to make loud noise and they run by. So when we're recording our podcast, I do the same thing. And I have a ridiculously complicated setup with my little, I have two boards that I run it through. And I'm constantly trying to turn my mic up or my wife's up or down and keep that balance going. And yeah. And it's a real challenge. I feel your pain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's with all those trucks flying by the house, you're like, hey, hon, is it a little smoggy in here?
Yeah, it drives me crazy trying to get the sound quality right, because that's one of the problems that we all struggle with. If you record any kind of audio for people to consume, they want decent sound and audio, and that's a challenge.
And that's the thing. That's actually one of the definers for a podcaster that is decent or maybe not decent, is how much do they care about the audio. I understand not everybody can have, you know, maybe the same access to equipment to, you know, buy certain things, but there's a lot of things you can do for free that will help your audio. And it's a very big marker as to how much you care about what you do.
Yeah, the effort.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I've talked to countless of other podcasters and stuff. And a lot of times they'll ask me for tips on, you know, whatever. And you can tell real quick with conversation how deep they've dug into just the audio quality side of things. A lot of times people start podcasts and they're like, oh, it's going to be a show about this and I'm going to focus on the content, which is good. But, you know, especially just audio, you're not doing video, because like you can get distracted with video. I mean, you may, like if you're watching it, you're watching people's lips move. You're like, everybody reads lips, you know, even though you don't really... you do it subconsciously, you're reading lips and just things going on camera that you're distracted. But when it's just the audio and it's being plugged into your ears the whole show, you learn real quick that, you know, if somebody cares about their audio or not, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to kind of get it fine tuned. We started with a $40 microphone off Amazon that my wife and I shared, and the quality was horrible. And I managed to put this whole setup together for about, I probably got about $150 invested over here, really. So I've been pretty fortunate with it.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, you got a good sound and $150. I mean, a lot of people, if they just cut out fast food for a month, they'd be good for that. I mean, it's just...
Hey, now let's not talk.
That's like saying cut out coffee. What are you, nuts?
No, we don't stop drinking coffee. No. That's for sure. Yes.
Most definitely.
It would be a problem for sure. Yeah,
we're all truck drivers here. That would be dangerous.
Yes, it would. So I said to my wife yesterday, and I said to Tony today, you know, if it weren't for chemicals, I couldn't function. Caffeine, that is what keeps me going.
Yeah. That's why we Lindsay made the apparel store on the website the way she did, because you know,
it's for truck drivers.
It's for truckers, you know? and we are coffee addicts, and so a lot of the t-shirts and stuff, you know, have coffee stuff related. And I don't know. I haven't even checked to see if people are buying that. I'll check and see if people even care. So
I heard you guys talking about it, so I want to check it out. Yeah, because I thought the exact same thing. That's caffeine and nicotine. That yes. moves Americans
yes.
crazy.
Yes, it does. Yes. I think you know this, but if you don't know this, you'll find out now.
I'll know now.
So I started smoking when I was like 10. And
surprise, Dad.
And so throughout my entire life, I was on and off with smoking. And then I went a good stretch of my 20s where I barely smoked. And when I started driving truck, forget about it. Like, I needed something to do. Like, I would find myself thinking, oh, I get to go in my truck and smoke a cigarette right now. It's like, it gives me something to do. I'm so excited, you know, for that 5 minutes at last.
Yeah, I hear you there. I had given up all nicotine at one point. And then when my son went off to the army, because I had them from little bitty, you know, actually one goes to kindergarten this year. And my oldest son is, let's just say he's been married in the process of a divorce. He's been to the military, finished that. I got some kids from all the generations, right? But when he went off to the army, he had a one of the vape mods. And he gave it to me to hang on to for him. And I said, well, how does this thing work? And ever since then, I've been hooked on, yep, on nicotine again.
Just I hear you. That's, I switched to vaping too. And it tastes better. It smells better. It's cheaper for now until the government takes it over, which they are going to be doing.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I'm a do-it-yourselfer. I have my own vape juice that I make because, well, I know it's in it and it's harder for them to take that away.
So yeah. I was just talking to people that run a vape store and they were telling me that I guess the price of the nicotine per liter has gone up astronomically. Is that your case too?
I don't know. I don't use a lot of nicotine in mine. I keep it fairly low and I have a liter of it sitting over here. So I've got a ways to go before I buy it again.
Well, I mean, because the guys I was talking to, if I heard them right, they said that, and I know this is going to sound absurd and can't be right, but this is what they said to me, that they could buy a liter of nicotine for $500 and it went up to $15,000.
And that can't be right.
That they're not even making their own juice anymore. Like, it's a whole vape shop and it's a popular one. They don't even make their own juice anymore because they would run them out of business making their juice.
If that's the case, I have a brand new liter of nicotine in my desk drawer. It's 100 milligram nicotine. Anybody wants to give me 15 grand for it, I am down.
Yeah, sell it for 10.
And yeah, sell for 10 to be discount.
There you go. And I'll quit for that price.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, we dawdled around the podcast thing a little bit. Why don't you tell people about your podcast?
Our podcast is called Foster Care, An Unparalleled Journey. And my wife and I, we're a foster and adoptive family. We have been for the last dozen years or so. We have 7 kids that have called us mom and dad for full time in their life. Some of those are biological kids, some are kinship. And our youngest 4 were adopted through the system. We've had about 20 kids come through our life. And this has been back in 2015. Our oldest daughter got sick and she had a nasty disease called hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis, which is just as nasty as it sounds. And she fought that stuff for 9 months. It's normally they only see it in infants and they usually diagnose it postmortem. And she was 17 when she got sick. So she had a healthy body. She could fight, and fight she did. We tried experimental stuff. We did chemo. We did radiation. Actually, no, we didn't do radiation. She did do radiation because she had to have a bone marrow transplant. I mean, you name it, they threw the whole kitchen sink at it, and she fought like crazy. And at the end of her 9 months, she lost her battle. And when we lost her, that just broke us. I mean, it fundamentally breaks you as a human being to go through that. And we just went, we can't foster kids right now. We were not in a healthy place to try and help kids who are from broken places themselves. And so we had to turn our license off for a little while just to circle the wagons. I mean, I had kids who, some of my older sons, they were raised with her. You know, that was their sister. And so they went through their own struggles, mental health struggles. They both dabbled a little bit into drugs and stuff like that. And we kind of fell off the rails for a minute. And as we started to kind of come back, we started to, I don't even want to say heal, but just learn to get up and breathe again every day. I looked at my wife and I said, I feel like I should be doing something. I don't, you know, I feel like we're not getting anything. We're not doing anything for these kids. And I feel bad for it, but I know we're not ready to bring kids in. And so I got this idea to start a blog and I tried that. And turns out when you work a 60-hour a week job, that takes a lot of time and I didn't have time for it. And she says to me, she says, well, you talk a lot. Why don't you start one of those podcast things you listen to? And I said, that's not a terrible idea. And that was a year ago this past November. We're a little over 100 episodes in. And we have just been able to give space for people to share their stories of whether it's a parent or a caseworker or a CASA worker. We just had an attorney who came on and talked about her situation, or people who were in foster care or adopted and tell their stories. Because the truth is there is a kid within a quarter mile of you being abused today. And I don't care who it is, which listener it is, what part of the world you're in, unless you don't have a house within a quarter mile of yourself, you have kids around you who are getting hurt, who need a place, who need somebody to step up. There's 500,000 kids in foster care right now. 500,000 kids. They need homes. And I'm going to tell you right now, we don't have enough homes. And we have, start thinking about like football stadiums could fill up with these kids who need homes. And we don't have them. So part of our goal is just to help let people know what's going on out there, what the need is, and get people to be willing to look at it. And if it's something you're called to, then to go look into doing it yourself. Because my God, if we don't deal with these kids now, when they're little kids and they need help, we're going to deal with them in 20 years when they're incarcerated and we're paying for it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, troubled kids often turn into troubled adults if you can catch them young, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of it's not their fault to start with. And it sucks.
You know, I'll tell you real quick, just a real short story. A lady we interviewed a while back, she had a daughter who had RAD, which is reactive attachment disorder. And most people aren't familiar with that one. And this little girl had, she had attempted to kill her sister, her biological sister. She tried to drown her in the pool a couple times as she tried to push her into the fireplace while it was burning. Several times she tried to kill the animals. She live plucked the woman's chickens. She was just, you know, did a lot of really horrible things. Tried to burn the house down in the middle of the night while everybody was sleeping. She did all this by the age of 8 years old.
Wow.
And the hard part is it's not her fault. She was eight. She wasn't born evil. Some really bad humans did some things that really damaged her at a very young age. And she's going to have to live a life with those mental struggles that she'll deal with her whole life because of what adults did to her.
Mm. Yeah.
And I just feel like that's one of those messages that people need to hear, that these are the kids that need a place. These are the kids that need help, because what is it? Something like more than half of the kids who age out of the foster care system are going to end up in prison.
Wow.
That's staggering.
That's a staggering
statistic. It is. And to not have a kid find a safe home to move to have that full-time family to where they have a place to call home by the time they leave foster care and become an adult. That is just a huge piece that will do so much to help a kid not turn into another statistic.
Yeah. And you know, to actually add the numbers to that, you said there's 500,000 kids in foster care. Half of them, if they age out of foster care, will wind up in prison.
That's absolutely. Why do you think our prison systems are so full right now?
Yes, that's 250,000 adults who used to be kids who were in foster care who will wind up in prison. Just think about that, people, for a second. Just think about that.
Yeah.
250,000 more.
What's the common denominator here amongst like this stuff, and also and just in general when you're talking about people who are just pretty much crappy adults is they had crappy childhoods. They didn't have parents. They didn't have a father. They didn't have a mother. Life went sour early for them, and there was nobody there to mentor them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very common story for people. Most people who have, you know, solid homes growing up, people who love on them and stuff, they have a much stronger chance. I mean, some people decide to just go off the rails anyways. Life hits them later or whatever. But there's a lot of times that it could be prevented if you just catch them young and show children love. And I think it's awesome what you're doing, man.
Oh, my word, yeah.
Me and my dad we just are talking to you. We're going to come on your show and, we're going to talk for your audience about just our story and, the whole adoption process and stuff. And, I wouldn't say it's dramatic or anything, but it's our family story. Mm-hmm. And, it's something that, you know, it's a reality, but it's something that we don't even think about half the time. Like I never look at my dad and like, you know, think of him anything other than dad. Like, sometimes when people like know that he's not my biological dad or anything, that they'll say your stepdad. I'm like, no, don't say that. He's my dad. Okay. And I mean, he was but they got married when I was two, and, you know, he's dad. And so like, don't cause it's insulting to me almost, you know, I'm just like, hold on a second, you know? And so, I don't know how people will like it, but we'll definitely come on and chat with you and let you know just how things unfolded for us and stuff. Right. But
absolutely. Yeah.
It's something that we've never even considered talking about just as a topic of conversation for anybody, right.
but be totally interesting to do it.
Yeah.
My son and I have a similar story. My oldest boy, he is, CJ is, he's in his early 20s. I'll say that so I get it right. But he was two when I met his mama, and he just started off calling me dad. And that's been our story as well. I've just been dad. He ran across his biological dad here a couple of years ago, maybe a year or two ago, and had a chance to kind of meet the guy a little bit. But, you know, it is what it is. And this is just our story. And that's what we do. Yeah. We like to hold space for people to share stories because that's how we communicate in this world. All the way back to cavemen, and they were painting on walls right there, telling stories. That's what we do. That's why we have podcasts.
And I'm listening to how you're describing your show. And it's like, you're doing similar motivated things like I do with the confessionals, where I let people come on and share their paranormal experiences so that they kind of get it off their chest. And a lot of times it's very helpful and soothing for people to be able to talk to somebody without feeling like this person's just gonna, you know, call the local mental institution kind of thing. And it's a similar thing with you, where it's just like you're letting people come on and share their story, and that's therapeutic for people big time. You know, it's providing a platform for people to share their story, because so many people go through life feeling unheard. Like they have their life story and nowhere to put it, you know. And that's why I think podcasts are a great venue for that.
Absolutely. It's cheap, it's easy, and people have the opportunity to spread their story out and let the whole world hear it. I have had several people tell me that they've never told their story before, and a lot of them were more traumatic stories. They get to the end and they say, that was really, really cathartic for me to just tell my story, because nobody's there to argue with them or try and correct them and tell them that's not really what happened, like a lot of people will do. And we all have a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Amen. Everybody's got a story to tell.
Yeah. Well, I think it's awesome, man. One more time before we move on here, the name of the podcast.
It is Foster Care, An Unparalleled Journey. And the easiest way, because most of us haven't spelled paralleled since math class, is just to go to fostercarenation.com, and it's all there.
Fostercarenation.com. Awesome, man. And before we get into truck driving talk, I got to tell people, 20 minutes into this interview, we're in the presence of a celebrity, folks. We're in the presence of a celebrity. This is not just a guy who drives truck and does podcasting. This is a guy who does TV as well. Tell us, what shows do you do?
Well, so far I have had two opportunities to go on the TV show Forged in Fire and compete there.
That's awesome. That was a blast.
That's really cool. Forged in Fire is a show that is about blacksmithing, and it's so funny because I've never watched it before. And my dad and I come down here about 30 minutes before we call you, and we're eating some lunch, and I turn on Netflix and I'm just flipping through something that I can have on in the background that's, you know, semi-interesting or something that I could just kind of have to listen to. And I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. So I hit play on it, and we're watching Forged in Fire, and I had no idea that we were talking to a guy who's been on the show.
Yeah.
And for anybody who is fans of the show, David Baker, one of the judges, is just the most down-to-earth guy you'll ever meet. He'll just walk up, shake your hand, and talk to you like a normal person. And for a guy who's on a show they've got 9 seasons out now, I think? 8 or 9 seasons? They've been around for a minute. And so I expected some ego somewhere, but none. David Baker, he was just a solid dude. Ben Abbott was on the first episode I was on, just a sweetheart of a guy. And Doug Markaita, he's the guy who does all the martial arts stuff. And he's always smiling, and he just looks so dang happy. And I didn't think it was possible, but he's actually a nicer, happier person in person. Wow. Is on the show. And I got to meet Jay Nielsen the second time I was there. And he was just a funny guy and just an enjoyable dude to be around. And so, yeah, it was a blast. I really enjoyed it.
So how did you get involved in blacksmithing? I mean, you're driving truck. I know, if I remember correctly, in the email, you spent time in the military. And actually, we were talking about that beforehand. How did how'd you get a hobby of blacksmithing with adoption, foster care, truck driving, military? And oh, by the way, I'm really good at blacksmithing, and that's why I was on a TV show.
Well, to start off, you don't have to be really good at it.
Oh, okay.
And I can prove that. I can prove it. No, honestly, I had teenage sons, and quite frankly, when my youngest boys became teenagers, I needed to hit something. I need to get some frustration. I was like, I'm going to, and it was some, I stumbled across a video or two on YouTube and I thought I could try that. And I did some Craigslist research. I found an anvil and a couple things for $50 or $60, which anybody who is anything with blacksmithing, that's a steal. $50 or $60. That is that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. An anvil, a good anvil right now will cost you close to a grand.
Wow.
I have one down there that cost me close to that in my shop right now as well. But I just found a couple of things on Craigslist and decided to give it a shot, put a couple of YouTube videos out there. Cause I had a camera with a screen on or a video camera on it. And so I just did a few videos and it took off. And then one day I was on Facebook and I got a message from somebody who says, hey, we'd like to this and, you know, talk to you about being on the show Fortune Fire and being raised by a police officer. My very first instinct was, who is this and how are they trying to screw me over?
Yes.
Right.
I did some research and I went, oh, this email address is from ITV Creative. And that's who puts that show together. And one thing just rolled into another and they offered me an opportunity to come out on the show. And I went, oh, this is really kind of cool and interesting. And I'll go ahead, spoiler alert. I don't have the extra $10,000 prize money to blow. but it was still, I was a blast, man. It was a great time.
Ah, it's really cool. It's a great experience in life to do something like that. That is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, anybody who is listening, go ahead and check it out. What seasons was it again that you were on?
Season 6, episode 18, and then season 8, episode 14.
Okay. So mark it down, go check it out, listen for this voice. You'll see his face then too on the show. So check it out, Forged in Fire. Now, you drive truck for a living. And yes, you went into the military and you said that when you got out of the military, I think you said you got into tow truck driving, right?
Yep. I went off to the military and I did the whole military thing and learned some language stuff and did the intelligence stuff and got out of the military and said, I can't really use this as a civilian. And so I had no real skill set to use. And when I came out, my dad was a police officer and he said, well, I know a guy who runs a tow truck company. I can get you a job over there. And so I got a job driving a tow truck and did that for several years, worked for a small company that was owned by a real good dude. And one day he says, I need you to get your CDL so you can drive big trucks. And I said, hell no, I'm not interested in that. No, sir, not. Mm-mm. And I was young. And at that point, I think we had three kids. We were raising two or three kids at that point. And my wife was a stay-at-home mom and I was making like 20 grand a year. And I thought that CDL will make me more money. I can go make commission calls at night on big truck stuff. And that's big money. I might go. So I went and got my permit and I learned to drive from the old guy who owned it, which was awesome. I'm one of the last generation who didn't have to go through a truck driving school. I had like the old man who owned the truck sitting beside me and you better not scratch his gears.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a good way to learn because the pressure is on the whole time. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm in school. You know, I'm here to learn. It's okay if I mess up. It's like, no, this is my truck. Don't mess it up.
You know? Yeah. And a big wrecker is not a cheap truck to own either. Not you know, you're you get into some of the bigger rotators nowadays. I mean, you're spending $500,000.
Oh, yeah.
So you would go out and like pull, you know, tractor trailers out of ditches and crap like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We had a truck that was in a bad wreck. It was a mail truck. But it was an old cab over and it was kind of tore up and the guy didn't want to come pay his tow bill. And the owner said, hey, I'll tell you what, you come down here and give me however much it was. And then just let me keep your truck and we'll call it even. And we used his truck and trailer and practiced rollovers in the back lot.
Wow.
So talk about a job. I mean,
it's
a pretty cool job.
Man, that sounds fun.
That does.
When I drive by like the fire company locally here, the fire station in the back, they have a big lot and they have old wrecked cars that are all burned up that they practice, you know, they light them on fire and then they put them out and stuff. And I'm just like, well, that part looks fun, you know?
Yeah, we did do some work with some of the fire department stuff, and that was always an interesting opportunity just to do weird, wild, different things that most people will never get to see. If you've never seen 50,000 pounds of chicken wings, frozen chicken wings, laying on the interstate, like you just haven't really lived.
Yeah, you haven't lived. That driver's lived enough.
I'm pretty certain he did, actually. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be joking about it.
Yeah. Man, that's rough. What's the craziest thing you saw while you were driving and doing the towing and stuff like that? I mean, I imagine you had some...
Did he mention the 50,000 pounds of chicken wings on the highway?
Is that the craziest story? Or?
No, that's not by far not it. I mean, you name it, we've seen it. Everything from the nasty wrecks, you know, one young kid, I think the cop said it was his fifth or sixth DWI. He went off the road. There was kind of a tiered road. It kind of stepped down when you went across the road, and he did it enough of a speed. He rolled the car end over end at least five times. And me and the police officer were sitting there arguing later on whether or not it was a Honda or a Toyota, because we couldn't determine it for sure until they got the windshield cut out of it. And we can read the VIN number tell by the VIN number what vehicle, at least who made it.
Mm-hmm. My word. Yeah. I mean,
we landed two helicopters in the highway that night.
How fast are you going? You are rolling a car end over end five times.
Well, my dad was a police officer, and he was also an accident reconstructionist. And I believe the minimum number they came up with was at least 120 miles an hour.
Oh, my word. The road. Wow.
Wow.
I mean, what else do you say to that? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was absolutely crazy. We've seen so many of those sorts of things. I mean, you know, I think one of the crazier things I've ever seen out there on a highway, I laugh. I call this my tangerines and tube socks stories. I'm riding down Interstate 44 out here, heading west, going to something. And I'm listening. I've got the, you know, this is back in the day when there was still somebody who'd talk to you on the CB, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I had the CB on. I'm riding down a highway and I hear some gal making a bunch of noise. And I should have paid attention to her voice, because she had one of those voices that sounded like maybe she'd had one too many cartons of Camels this week. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I definitely got you.
And she's coming down the highway. I hear her hollering at this guy behind me. And I kind of turned it up and I missed what she was saying. And as it was a big old Kenworth coming up alongside me, she's hollering at me, "Hey, Wrecker, look over here." And I turned my head. I should have known better. But out of the passenger seat, this big old Kenworth as she goes by, like she goes, "Here they are." And this old, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, very truthfully, this old gal pulls her shirt up and I'm telling you, they rolled down to the window.
Below the window.
Like fruit roll-ups.
Yeah, the right one was over there trying to hit the door lock or something. And I'm like, oh, dear God. What am I? And the only thing I can think is, that looks like tangerines and tube socks hanging down there. And this old boy who was right behind me, I hear him and he says, "Oh, baby, is them real?" And I thought, yeah, real long. What the hell? And then she responds with the only thing that could be worse. She says, "Baby, that's from having four kids and two grandbabies sucking on them." Yeah, don't get me wrong. Breastfeeding is beautiful. It's wonderful. It's healthy. It's all that. It's great. I'm not mad about it. But four kids, there should not be an "and" after the number of kids.
Amen. Amen. That's
what are the grandkids doing there?
It was all I could do not to just turn right and find a bridge abutment to run into. Yeah, I was.
Are you happy you asked?
Oh man,
we should have just stuck with the 50,000 pounds of chicken wings on the highway. Now everybody's got this picture in their head.
I'm hoping this way it kind of gets out of mind that way. Get all the other heads and leave my head a bit, because I still haven't got that one completely.
We should have just moved on to UPS. Oh my gosh. Wow. So not to prolong the topic or anything,
but
I vaguely feel like I remember hearing somebody somewhere talk about how women, if they let somebody like a baby start breastfeeding, their body will start like turning on and allowing that to happen. Is that true? Or does anybody know? I mean, is that why grandma could breastfeed?
If you go back far enough, there was what they call wet nurses. And I believe it had something to do with that. I'm just really trying not to think about my grandma trying to breastfeed me. Otherwise, I'm just, you yeah. hear a loud boom. It gets my head exploding.
Oh man, I had a, there was a guy in college that lived in my dorm room, or not in my dorm room, but down on the dorm hall. He was a weird guy. And he would walk up and down the hallway, squeezing his breasts, milking himself. He would literally squeeze white substances out of his breasts. And I was just like, how is that possible? I don't know. Does anybody know? Does anybody have an answer to that one?
Fortunately, I do.
You do? Oh, wow.
There's a condition I'm trying
You're
to
like an encyclopedia.
I have way too much useless knowledge. There's a condition, and the whole man boob thing, like there's an actual condition where guys can, it has to do with the level of estrogen in the body. It's an actual thing. Yeah.
Wow. It's,
I don't want to know that.
Wow. Very interesting.
Is it?
Yes, it is. It answers so many questions as to this guy now. Like, it makes sense.
You haven't just Googled it yet?
I mean, no. The whole wet nurse thing I've heard about, and that's, you know, that's part of history past, and that's, you know, that's a normal part of history. Women would nurse other women's kids.
Yeah.
But the whole man boob thing, it's like... I'm out. You know, dad, I don't
hey,
know.
Hey, dad, take your shirt off real quick.
No, we ain't walking down this road.
Come on. Okay, when the microphone's off, we're done recording, you will? Promise?
I don't do a topless episode.
So. I have no idea where we're going with this, but
it's just getting weird. Okay, so you drove for UPS, huh?
I did drive for UPS.
Thank God for UPS
company. I went over to UPS. We did all their work for them. The record service I worked for, we did all the work in our area, and so I knew those guys over there pretty well. And I got an opportunity to step in off the street over there, which almost never happens. But at the time, UPS was pulling all their freight off the rail because the rail was giving them trouble. Mm-hmm. And they were running, they were really going hardcore feeders. And we could run stuff from St. Louis all the way out to Big Cabot, Oklahoma, and meet up with Dallas and Austin and Houston drivers. And they in 24 hours, we could run the freight, you know, faster than they could even think about it on the rail. And so they were hiring drivers like crazy. And I got in on that way. And I worked for them for about 2 years. And it was good money, and they had amazing insurance, and I have nothing else good to say about them.
Come on.
I mean, I have lots of things to say about them, just nothing good. Their management in this terminal was just horrible. One of the guys there, there was two of them, and one of them, I think the common saying was, when God put ears on that one, he ruined a perfect prick. And it was true. they were just, it was just bad management. They ruled by fear, and they were constantly trying to find a reason to fire you. Mm-hmm. I knew guys who had been fired 4 and 5 times.
Wow.
What's the point of firing somebody if you're going to bring them back?
Well, the union made them bring them back, mm-hmm. but they would fire them, and it was kind of their way of punishing them for something that they didn't like them. And it was just ruled by fear over there. And so after I got my 2 years of driving experience at UPS, I could technically call it real truck driving experience. A record service was questionable as to whether you call that truck driving experience, because it was a record. It was a truck. I drove a big truck. Mm-hmm. Before I ever drove a big tractor trailer, I had one on the hook. I towed one before I drove one. And so I had the experience there, but this was real conventional experience that I could use to go somewhere else. And so as soon as I had an opportunity to do that, we were going to move a little ways away. And there was a company out there that I heard good things about. And I said, I'm just going to go talk to them. And I talked to them and got the job set lined up and went into UPS and said, I'm going to put in my 2 weeks notice. And the boss looks at me, he says, well, we've already bid for vacations. I said, not vacation, dude, like my 2 weeks notice. He said, what do you mean? I said, 2 weeks from today, I won't be here anymore. I'm going to stop coming in here. And he's like, you can't quit. Nobody quits this job. Nobody quits. They make too much money to quit. And I said, yeah, I'm still going to quit. I said, well, why would you want to do that? And I said, because half these guys around here are looking to screw each other over. And I don't know which half is which most days, because that's kind of some of the struggles that I found in that particular union. I said, the only guys I can trust is you guys in management, because I know you're going to screw me every chance you get. And his eyes got big. And he got a little bit offended. And I said, dude, you want me to lie to you? Here's the truth. You know, I hate coming in here every day. I leave here just paranoid. I leave here angry. I'm not a good husband. I'm not a good father. And I'm going to find a job where I can just go and work and do my job and go home and be a dad, because that's what I really want. And I don't care if I don't make as much money there.
Amen.
Wow. You know, it sounds like
the grass is not always greener.
No, it's not.
And drivers with experience will tell you that. You can work for 10 different companies. I don't care. The grass is not greener. Just because just because the truck says UPS on the side doesn't mean they're infallible or fantastic.
Yeah, you know, you make a good living. I have a cousin who worked for UPS in down around Nashville, what they call White's Creek, Tennessee.
Okay.
And from what I hear, it's nothing like that down there.
Exactly.
But the one up here in Earth City, in close to St. Louis, whew, I would not recommend getting a job there if you like your life to be normal.
Right. Yeah, and it's totally understandable. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. People running the show, you know, need to understand drivers are not, you know, especially nowadays. I mean, you take a look at the market nowadays, look at the truck driving market, look at the jobs that are available. These, you know, companies, you know what? I had a job when I came here. I'll have a job when I leave. You know, that's a lot of drivers' attitudes, and it's understandable. You know, you treat people like crap, you're going to get crap drivers.
Yeah, the industry's not what it used to be. You know, like, it's not like you can treat people like crap and somebody else just come walking through that door. Like, you fire somebody or somebody quits, you're struggling to replace that person these days.
Absolutely. I don't know if your market is as hard as ours is, but, you know, I've done a lot of training for these guys. You know, if you remember talking with Andrew here a few weeks back, I actually trained Andrew to work at our company.
Oh,
and so that's how I got to know Andrew. As a matter of fact, right after we lost our daughter, when I came back from bereavement leave, he was in my truck the next day. So poor Andrew got to see a side of me that nobody else has ever got to see, because I was kind of an angry dude for a little bit. And he got to hear the completely unfiltered version of me. And that's not always what people want. But
I remember him saying that we were going to be talking to you.
Yep.
Yeah. And well, and so I've trained a lot of guys here. And that's one of the things I've noticed is like the quality of driver that we've been able to pull. Oh my gosh, it's gone down and they can't hardly find anybody. And for once, the drivers are a bit, you know, pardon the pun, but in the driver's seat here, because we're needed.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. You know, I mean, you're seeing companies that have never, I mean, I don't remember when I started driving almost 30 years ago, there was no LTL carriers paying sign-on bonuses. And you're starting to see that all everywhere.
Yeah. Isn't Pitt doing that now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have another fuel hauler in our area who's offering, they were offering a $5,000 sign-on bonus and for no experience. And if you had experience, it was a $10,000 sign-on bonus.
Yeah. I mean, ABF is offering a sign-on bonus in this area.
Wow.
$10,000 sign-on bonus.
Really?
For ABF, yeah.
How long do you need to be there to get that bonus?
I don't know. I don't know how they work it. Maybe they pay you like $1 a week towards your bonus.
Yeah. I mean,
you're stuck there for a long time.
I might just hop from company to company to collect those bonus checks and bail for the next one.
I'm like, every 6 months, baby.
I'll just be counting mine. Thank you. Okay, next.
it's where we are right now. So, you know, it's a different world.
10 grand.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, over the last 13 years, I don't even know how many guys I've trained. But just seeing what we've dealt with, you know, what the guys are hiring, some of them. I mean, I've had some interesting experiences with new guys for sure.
I bet. I don't know how many of them can drive a stick or not. I don't even know anymore. I mean,
they don't get to ride in my truck unless they can drive a stick, because I will not drive an automatic until they stop buying manuals. I will have a manual.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. They stopped buying manuals.
Yeah, it's like you're last man standing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of the business. It's the way it is, where it's going, and I have no control over what they buy. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you look at this, I don't know if they're being trained on automatics. I don't know. I imagine that's what's happening now, because it seems like they're having a harder time, you know, finding drivers who can drive stick.
Absolutely. It is. But, you know, I'll train you to drive a manual if that's what I have to do. I don't like that idea. Yeah. But to be fair, my boss, I actually taught him how to drive a manual transmission in a big truck. So that was quite a few years back. Yeah. But yeah, I taught him how to do it. So it's part of the job that I think is necessary to be able to do, because the manuals are great for some things where the automatics really suck.
Right.
Not all of them. I mean,
I'm with you.
Yeah, some of the automatics have their good sides, but yeah, I mean, and I've run just about everything you can imagine except for anything with two sticks. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I haven't had an opportunity to drive yet. But yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. I think my very first vehicle was had a three on a tree, you know. I've run a three on a tree, the fours, the fives. I had a six-speed wrecker, too, with seven-speed. I ran a seven-speed Volvo cab over. It didn't have a splitter, and the stick didn't go vertically down into the floor. It actually ran horizontally into the box on the back side of the cab, and you actually shifted, like, the pattern was 90 degrees off because the stick went into the back wall.
Right.
It was the weirdest thing I've ever driven. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. But
it's crazy. A transmission. We can figure this out, right?
Right. It works.
Got it. Got to figure it out. Yeah. I like the way you said that, though. I haven't had an opportunity to drive a double stick yet. I'm like, that's one way of putting it. I wouldn't look at it as an opportunity. I'd be like, no thanks.
I'd love to be able to say I've done it. Yeah. I know how to do it, you know, a duplex or a triplex. But, you know, I'm hauling gas now, and we do a lot of work in St. Louis City. And it's enough of a challenge to drive to that city without getting shot on a 10 speed. I don't think I need two sticks in town with that.
Yeah.
Sure. Holy cow.
What gear am I in? Which way do I go? You know, yeah.
Two hands, three hands. Hey, I need another driver.
Yeah.
That's actually an idea. I have to come to a stop and all the way to a stop to get in gear. Holy crap. And there's a drug deal going right there.
Yeah. They put the passenger seat in there for that reason. You're the shifter. I'm the steerer. You know? Ready? One, like two, funny. Three. Go.
Heck yeah.
Jeez, man. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, I look at those kind of videos and stuff, and I guess in the sense I'd be, if I drove that successfully, I'd be like, yeah, I can drive that. But the process of gearing up to actually doing it, I'd need to be like on a track somewhere, no pressure, because I don't want to have to deal with that in like a work truck trying to get from point A to point B.
In a city situation.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah.
No.
Thank you. You know, when I first learned to drive when I just had my permit, because a wrecker, you can drive a big wrecker to an emergency scene if you need to be, and you don't need a license for it. So I just had my permit. They had me take a truck that I hadn't driven before out there, and I get in this sucker and I'm first gear low, first, second, and I couldn't get it. You know, third gear finally went in. I couldn't get into fourth. I'm like, what the hell? I fought this thing all the way there. And I get there and I said something to the boss. I'm like, dude, I cannot find fourth gear, you know, or fourth or ninth gear here. It's just not there. And he goes, well, wait, are you shifting it? You know that it's the pattern. It's like a U pattern, not an H pattern. So what do you mean? So you start up and to the left, you go down to the left, then you go down and to the right, and then the fourth gear is up. And I went, what? What?
Wow.
You made me drive this truck without telling me that?
That would have made things so much easier.
I thought it was common knowledge.
yeah, amen. What? So, yeah, I've had to drive just about everything in just that emergency type situation where, hey, you need to take this. It's a Super 10. Well, what's a Super 10?
Yeah.
Try and keep track of that.
I don't.
That's not hard, but once you learn it. But learn it first.
But learn it first, yes.
I don't know what you guys are talking about with all these patterns and stuff. I drive the Q patterns. It's just kind of like this. It's all over the place. You know, just figure it out, you know?
Tony just hits that D button.
Oh, man.
I got my very first automatic the other day because somebody else had pulled my trailer and I had to get their tractor out from underneath it so I could leave. And I went to move it. It was actually Andrew's truck. And I went to pull it out and I went, how do I make this thing go? It took me 3 or 4 minutes. There's what looks like a blinker stick on the right-hand side, and you twist it forward for drive and backwards for reverse.
Wow,
and
went, that's different.
Oh, yeah. It blew me away. I was like, how the hell do I make this thing? I just need to get it out of my way so I can put my real truck underneath my trailer. My real truck.
That's funny.
So, go ahead.
I'm just not a fan of the automatics, if you can't tell. You know, my favorite truck ever I drove was an old 90s model Pete. It had the 3406B model motor in it with an 18 speed transmission. And I'm going to tell you, when I had a full load behind me, it had 115 feet long, 135,000 pounds. You could pull a decent grade and gain speed and never downshift. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, you can't do that with these new trucks.
Yeah. No.
No.
The trainer at the Norristown Terminal for Pitt, Ohio, he has the last manual transmission that came in for that terminal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody that he's training is going to train on a manual transmission until there's none left. And so I imagine probably, I don't know. I mean, because that truck doesn't go out on line haul anymore, it just like it's, it doesn't collect the miles it used to. Right. So I imagine they'll have it there for a good, I don't know, 8 years still.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, he'll be the last one standing when it comes to the manual transmissions for sure. And once he goes, that's it. It's all automatic from there, man.
Well, we'll say a little prayer for him and his truck.
You got that right.
I got to reach out to him and see if he wants to come on the show sometime. I think it'd be fun to have the guy who taught me how to drive trailer in studio to talk on the show.
To maybe tell a few stories about you.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
That would be interesting.
I can tell a few stories. It's like, I could not, the downshifting, it took me like a week. I was training on the job. So I'm like, I'm trying to get to the deliveries while I'm learning how to shift and everything. And it was, if I remember correctly, it took me a while to downshift, but I could not get the backing up, man. And I was just like, I can't get this. I just freaking can't get it. Maybe it's just not meant for me. And then one of the other drivers who drives straight truck, he used to drive trailer. He said, just put your hand on the bottom of the steering wheel and turn the direction that you want that trailer to go. I'm mm-hmm. like, huh? And he's like, yeah. Like you're trying to make the trailer, the back end go left and you're turning to the right. If you put your hand on the bottom of the steering wheel, just push it to the left. It's actually going to the right. I was like, oh. And then I got it, you know? And, it was a situation where I was thinking, ah, man, like, this is almost embarrassing. Like it literally took me like 2 weeks, I think, to finally start hitting like my turns. And I was like, and then it just snapped into place for me though. I was just all of a sudden just started happening. I was like, oh, I was doing delivery or something and I actually backed into the door and I didn't even know
the correct door.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like diagonal. I didn't get out of the truck, walk to the back and say, it's crooked, but if they flip that plate up, it should land on the bumper enough for them to drive on, you know? There's none of that. I actually hit the door. But when I did it for the first time, I didn't even realize. I just got out of the truck and started going, and I was like, oh, wait a second. I actually backed it up right. How about that? You know?
Yeah. That's a great feeling. See, when they put me in a big wrecker and told me I had to back a trailer in, and the trailer was on the back of the tractor that was on the back of my wrecker.
Right.
Let me tell you, that's a game worth learning. Oh, buddy.
I can imagine. Yes. I can imagine what that is like.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're at a truck dealership and you have to back into a parking space.
Wow.
Fun.
yeah. Talk about banging your head on the steering wheel for a while to figure that out. But once I figured it out, it wasn't that bad.
Huh.
Yeah. It was like, maybe like a month after I got, well, actually, you know, I remember I got my CDL, my Class A, on your anniversary. So it was May 21st. And then in April, I entered into a competition at work. and I was like,
only the young. Yeah. You know? Only the young have the guts to do stuff like that. I just got my license. Yeah, I'll go.
Why not? Let's see if I can make states. and so, My trainer, actually, he takes the competition serious. And it's like before you even get in the truck to the driving portion, there's the written test that you have to do. And I think it's like 40 questions. And I'm like, he's like, if you're going to do it and you want to win, like you got to study the book. And I'm just like, I already know how to drive. I know the rules of the road. Like, I don't need none of that. And then I sit down for the test and it's like, in 1958, so-and-so commission decided to make this change on the tire tread of these kind of trucks in this state and on this hour of the day. I'm just like, what the hell? Like, why would anybody know this? Like, and so I read the first two or three questions and I just like, I was like, just checking them off and like, check, check, check. I was going A, B, C, A, C, D. And I was just like going all over the place. Like,
when in doubt, always go with C.
Like, abacadabba, baby. Abacadabba.
Like, I gotta hit this somewhere. I think when they went over the test results and stuff, they were like, Merkel, never mind. It's like, I don't even want to show you your test score. But I will say this, that we had it, part of the driving part was the serpentine where you're backing up between the drums and whoever could get closest to the drums without hitting them got, you know, I don't know, the prize or whatever it was. I don't know. And it was a long time ago. But
Snickers.
I was within inches of those drums the whole way. And
that wasn't on purpose.
No, hold on a second. No, hold on a second. For somebody who could not get the backing up thing, once I got the backing up thing, it became like my mission to become really good at backing up. And that was like my focus. Like I swear. I was better at backing up than driving forward at one time. I was so focused on being exact with backing up. And so when I did the drums and stuff, my trainer actually did that stuff with me. We at the end of the day, if we had time, we'd go into an empty parking lot, set up cones, and we would do that. And so like I was like, I got this. And I did great, guys. Everybody out there listening, I did great. I did great. Guys, I did great. I swear. Come on, Dad, give me something here.
Attaboy.
Oh, shut up. You should have been there, Dad. You would have been impressed. You would have said, not attaboy. You would have been like, that's my boy.
Yeah, the courage of the young, right?
Oh, you got that right.
I only ever did the competition once. It was the first year. And after that, I was like, eh. I'm not going to win because I'm not going to study that stupid book. So but my trainer, he did go to states and, or maybe I think it was nationals. I think he made nationals once and stuff, but, yeah. And I think Pitt, Ohio actually did have a national champion.
Did, yeah.
Yeah. A few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Before COVID. So
yeah.
We'll see.
But like they had this big banner with his face on it hanging in every terminal.
Yep.
And it was like, he was like the golden boy for the year. Like,
that's cool though, man. Yeah. It's cool to have that.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd take to be the golden boy. That's great. Like, I would love it.
No, thanks.
Yeah, I can't be the golden boy. I'm a little too honest to be the golden boy anywhere ever.
Okay, well, so here's the thing. I'm thinking golden boy gets away with being honest. Is that not the case here?
No.
Like, you're the golden boy. You can do anything.
Nobody does.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what? You know what, me? I just want to be anonymous. Just let me do my job. That's all I want to do. Do my job. I mean, I love where I work. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean it that way. I don't need to be known.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm just known as the guy who tells the truth. And that's come out to save me quite a bit. It's kind of almost got me in trouble a couple of times. You know,
I mean,
being one of my old bosses, you know, we had an FU contest across the warehouse one day because I wasn't going to give in because he was wrong. And he was just being a jerk and I wasn't going to put up with it,
right.
You know, but being known to tell the truth at work saves you. I was training a guy one day. I trained him for 4 weeks, and gas hauling's not, I mean, it's not a trained monkey job exactly. It can be, but we hit for probably 300-400 different locations. And there's a lot of accounts, a lot of things you need to know. I mean, there's different types of gas and octanes and all that. So there's a lot to learn. And so 4 weeks in, though, he should have known a thing or two. And he gets to the end of that training and he says he doesn't feel like he's trained. He feels like he needs more training. And I realized why a little later, because as we're riding down the road, he takes a phone call, which is fine. He's in the passenger seat, but we drive Peterbilts. They're small cabs, right? I don't have to listen to hear your side of the conversation. And this fool is sitting in my passenger seat of my truck being trained, and he takes a job interview. What? What? Who does this stuff? You know, and then the same day.
Now? Yeah, I can talk. No problem.
Then the same day, I had him driving a little later on, and we're going down the interstate, boring section of highway. I get it. And he's like messing with his pocket or something. I thought it was kind of weird, you know, but he's left-handed and he hits a bump and his hand jumps up and I can see in his hand, he is texting someone.
Oh,
he's actually using Facebook Messenger. I could see it clearly.
Wow.
While he's driving me down the highway
with his trainer.
It's an addiction. It's an addiction, guys. It's an addiction.
Wow.
So it's cocaine, but it doesn't mean I'm going to let you drive my truck.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah.
And so when we went back to the yard at the end of the day, and I went and talked to the office, I said, all right, my passenger seat's empty tomorrow. I'm done with this one. Give him to somebody who can do a better job, whatever. And I told him, I was like, look, this fool has signed a piece of paper. He knows he's fired if he gets caught texting and driving. It's federal law.
Right.
Y'all know this. I'm done. I'm giving him 4 weeks. He can't figure it out yet. I'm done. And so he brought him in the next day. And the very first words he says to my boss is, well, Jason's a racist. And my boss says she laughs because she knows me really well, right? If you take a look at me, if you're just on a podcast, obviously you can't, but I am what you would call ambiguously brown. Mm-hmm. Right, I could be any race you want me to be, almost.
That's how I feel.
But because we do the foster care, we do the adoption, I've come to safety meetings before. One day my wife was in the hospital with kidney stones. It was a mandatory safety meeting. You better show up. And so I showed up with one of my kids, my daughter that we have adopted, and she's mixed. And I've got this baby we had with us, baby Carl. Baby Carl was the blackest baby you've ever met in your life. He was so dark-skinned, he was purple. And anybody who is, if you know your black friends, just ask them what that means, and they'll tell you what, I mean, he was dark, yeah. Right? And I would walk into meetings like this sometimes with a black kid on one hip and a mixed kid over here. Like, we don't put any kind of weight behind that sort of stuff in our world. Sure. I don't care. And for this young man to look at my boss and try and convince him that I'm racist because I won't let him text and drive. I'm like, come on, you gotta be, is this the best we can do, is hire a guy like this?
Right.
He just wasted 4 weeks of my life having to deal with him.
Wow.
Just yeah, for nothing. Because honestly, at the end of the week, he was still looking for another job. He didn't want to work there. And I asked him before that morning, I asked him, I said, do you want this job? Do you really want this job? He said, I need the work. I said, well, I get that, but do you want the job? And his answer was, I need the work. And I went, all right. I know what you're doing, dude. You know, he wasn't there to do the work. We like I said, it's a job anybody can do, mm-hmm. if you've got a few brain cells.
Yeah. Amen. But,
you know, we've had a few that didn't have the brain cells to do it. You know, one guy, I can't even tell you what his name was. I don't remember his name. I just call him Sleeping Beauty because we couldn't drive more than a quarter mile before he would be asleep. Everywhere we went all day long. Wow. And I'm like, dude, you got to stay awake. You got to learn some of this stuff like while we're driving. And he would fall asleep while you're talking. He'd fall asleep all day. And I finally sounded like, dude, you got to stop this. And he didn't listen. I went to the office. Said, y'all are going to have to talk to him. So I drug him in and talked to him. Came back the next day. At the end of the day, he said, I think I did really good today, guys. Or, man, I think I really feel like I did good today. So why is that? And he says, well, he fell asleep four times today. Four times is a good day.
Good job, bud. Good job.
And here's the crazy part is this isn't a millennial issue. This dude was in his 50s.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like grown ass men who can't come in and do the job and just have some work ethic.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my word. How about it? Man. Wouldn't that be nice?
You know, yeah, it's what a complicated,
novel idea.
Right?
Yeah. What a novel idea.
This popped in my head. Awake. When you were talking about him texting while he was driving, the way you described the story, the imagery popped in my head of a guy, when I used to drive truck for Rico delivering copy machines, mm-hmm. There's this guy that nobody really wanted to ride with. He was a really nice guy, but he was just very different. And, you know, after a while, like I got to the point, after a while, I mean, I eventually just wound up driving my own truck. And I just told him, I said, I want to be by myself. I'll handle it myself. But before then, I just told him, I said, I'll take him because he works hard. And so I had him every day. But I started learning what people, there's like weirded out by him. Because like he didn't know how to socialize real well. Mm-hmm. And he was like a grown man. I mean, he had adult kids my age. And he would do this weird thing, and this is the imagery that popped in my head with what you were saying. I'd be driving down the road, and out of the corner of my eye, I could see him like almost like cuddling the window. And I'm like, what is this guy doing? And I couldn't see what he was doing, but I'd turn my head and look, and he had his like hands up, and he's like totally like back turned towards me, like cuddling on the window. I'm like, what in the world is this dude doing? Anytime he needed to do anything in the truck, whether it's text somebody or eat, he would do that. And that's, and I realized he was actually eating his lunch the one day when I realized what he was doing. He was like just holding it up next to his mouth, piece by piece, eating it, but keeping it away from me like I was going to steal it from him or something. And I'm just like, I used to say to him, like, bro, like, you're right, man. Like, it's okay. Like, I, like, I don't care if you're eating in front of me. Like, I mean, if I'm hungry, I'm going to stop and get food, and you know I'm going to buy it, you know? And, but he's like, oh, okay. But then he go back to doing it. And it's just like, I didn't know what.
It's like a habit.
Yeah. I don't know what his deal was, but I said he worked, and he did. He worked hard, but sometimes he worked too hard in the sense that everything he was doing didn't make sense. And he was getting in the way of productivity. I'd be moving machine, and you know, I can't even describe it. Like I'd be rolling machine through a doorway, and I got the door open with one hand, and I'm just kind of pushing it. And he'd like rush to get in front of me, and then like swing both doors wide open, and he'd stand in front.
He's standing in the middle.
He'd stand in front of the machine that we're trying to push through the door, holding the doors open, one on each hand, and he's trying to he's holding on, stretching, holding on, backing up, you know, with the hands on the door, fingertips, and then he like lets loose of the door, and they start closing the machine. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. So I'm like, Steve, it's okay, bro, it's okay. And one time, like, I got so frustrated, I was like, Steve, just stay in the freaking truck. Just stay in the freaking truck. I got it. Okay. And I felt bad. And I apologize. But
you wonder why he's cuddling the window. Poor guy needs something.
He's scared of me, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, I'm just glad Tony had told us that he was cuddling the window, not
I
like
know, right?
Man boobs or something over there. I thought he was going somewhere weird.
That's what I was thinking too. That's the word. Where's this story off to?
Stories just pop in my head. But Steve he was one of those guys, man. He was, and the funny thing was, like, he was just this very unique guy, you know. Like, I liked him. He was annoying, but he was a nice guy. And you would look at him, and he had like this big handlebar mustache that came down. He just looked like very rough and rough kind of guy. And you see him acting not the way he looks. And on top of it, his wife was a regional general manager for Walmart, and she made like $150,000 a year or something like that, like a crazy salary. And I was just like, something doesn't belong here, you know. like I was like, how'd you reel in something like that, man? Like, I was like, holy cow, you know. And he raised a whole family and everything, and I was just like, are you like this with your family? Like, I just like, I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
Hey, I've had some weird ones myself. You know, I had one guy, and I just called him Kentucky because that's where he was from. He was very proud of the fact that he was from the heels of Kentucky. He'd tell everybody who would stop long enough to hear him, he'd tell you he's from the heels of Kentucky. And you know, everybody knows where Ferguson, Missouri is, right? Mm-hmm. You've heard of it.
No,
at least
never heard of it.
Right?
Never heard of it.
Well, let me tell you something about Ferguson. What you saw on TV, that's at like a half mile of West Florissant Avenue. Ferguson's a nice town. It was at the time. It still is. It was just a small area that had a big problem in it. But during that time, we're at a station up there in North St. Louis County, which is, I mean, it's primarily black area up there. And we're up there, and we delivered a load, and I gave him the paperwork. Said, take that in there to Miss Nisi, give her the paperwork, tell her thank you very much, have a good day, and come on out. And I was putting up our stuff out there, you know, getting the hoses and the drops and all that put away. And He's not back out. I don't know what the hell. So I walk inside, and I know the neighborhood we're in. I know it well enough to know that I should be scared when I walked in to hear his country ass saying, well, where I'm from, if a 12-year-old kid tried to kill a man, we'd hang a boy.
Oh, my and I went, gosh.
The window in this store was knocked out the night before because of the Mike Brown riots.
Oh,
and this is what I hear. Like, my heart stopped.
Oh.
And I looked left and I looked right, and thank God there was nobody else in there. And little Miss Nisi is just sweet as can be. And I said, hey, we got to go. The next time I went in there, I apologized to her and said, look, he's just country, doesn't even know what he's saying. Trust me. I got in the truck and I looked at him. I said, dude, there'd have been a couple angry young men in there that took offense to that and decided to beat you down, I would have kicked you twice in the ribs just so I can get out.
I'm yeah. heading for the truck, and when I'm in it, I'm starting and going, dude.
I ain't going to fight for you. You got to. But stuff like that is like, oh my gosh. Right. And he looks at me and he says, well, and I don't know what logic led to this statement, but he says, well, you don't believe there's any Obama supporters around here, do you? I'm like, you're in North St. Louis County, dude. Like, Stop it.
You might be from Kentucky. Maybe you need to go back to the heels of Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Yeah. He ended up having to leave because not to fault the guy, you know, it's probably not his fault, but I honestly don't think the guy could read or write very well at all. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that in this job, you know, we deal with too many accounts and numbers and things. You got to get it right. Because if you pull off a wrong supplier, you know, if you make a mistake that's 20 cents a gallon, doesn't sound like much until you put 9,000 gallons in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's an expensive mistake. So yeah, he ended up having to go on down the road, and I sent him to another company, and then had to apologize to the guys who worked with him over there later on. So they had lots of stories about his experience there as well.
Yeah,
I bet they did.
That's been one of the things that some of the things in training, the guys, you just get these random cross selection of guys. I had one guy who he's still in the industry. He still works around. I see him all the time. So I don't want to, I'm not even going to mention his name, but he comes in, he first get to meet the guy, and he's got a wife, and they're having some issues, and they're trying to work through it. He's an older guy. He's probably not older, but he's not a young dude. How about that? He's old enough that his hair is white. And he's telling me the story about how his wife is having these problems. The next day he comes in talking about this girl who messaged him on Facebook. And it's this young gal. She's like half his age, and she's attractive, and she's talking to him, really wants to meet him and all this. He's going through this whole story. And then the next day he's telling me he noticed that in the background, there's this building that he recognizes, the world's tallest building or something in Dubai. And he mentions it to her. Oh yeah. Well, she's over there in Dubai to get a divorce from her husband, and she needs money for that. And he's got this whole story. I'm like, dude, what are you really taking this serious? Are you really going to send your money to your Dubai princess over here when she's half your age, dude, you know? And she just found you on Facebook and decided from your profile picture she was falling in love.
You were
and
a winner.
Now how do you sit in a truck with a straight face for 12 hours with that guy and not say, did your mama drop you on your head a lot as a baby? Because that's what I wanted to say for that whole time, but I can't do that. They won't let.
Oh, man. Rough. That's rough. I'm surprised you still have a tongue, because you're probably biting on it the whole time.
Again, a nice enough guy. I see him all the time. I still talk with him. But it's like some of these people you meet who...
On Facebook.
Oh yeah, you didn't know that? You can find the love of your life on Facebook.
How about it?
Or at least your next ex-wife or the gal who you spent all your money to.
Right. Some Dubai princess.
Oh man.
Say Dubai to your money.
Some of the people you think are normal people are this way. And
isn't
it's not until
scary?
You spend 60 hours a week in a truck with them 4 weeks in a row before it all comes out. I've had two different guys tell me their story of a meth addiction, a 9-year long meth addiction, each one of them.
Wow.
As I'm training them to drive a gas truck. The one, he looks at me, he said, because we have a compressed gas section too, he says, I'd really like to learn how to drive one of those anhydrous trucks. I'm like, wait. Anhydrous meth. I went to the office and don't let that dude touch it.
He's going to be diverting off his route every day.
It's just like, who says this stuff? Who really thinks they can do this and not have somebody look at you and realize you're an idiot? Or maybe they don't know they're an idiot at that moment.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Come on.
Nobody's been honest enough with them their whole life.
I can only be as honest as the company will allow.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
But you take it right up to that line, right?
you know where the line is.
Over it.
Yeah. Building a bridge over that line.
I've been with the company for almost 14 years now, so I've been there long enough I can get away with a little bit more every year.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's an equity.
Yeah, like I told the boss once a few years ago, before he was the boss, we were talking one day. I said, look, dude, you can fire me today, and in 2 days, I'll be in a different truck, because tomorrow I'll have to go pee in a cup. I have a 20-year driving history. It's a clean driving record. I haven't tore stuff up. I don't steal stuff. I'm like a freaking unicorn. I'm hard to find.
Yeah.
You know, find a guy who can drive any transmission you give him.
right,
who will show up every day on time, do the job, not steal. Like that, that makes you like king of the whole place if you just do that little bit right there.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to worry about it. So I'll step that foot over the line once in a while. Just because you need to.
We'll just nudge
some people
we'll just
need to be told they're not smart.
You got that right.
Oh, man. Well, on that note, I'm smart enough to know I have another interview for Hammer Lane in 9 minutes. So we got to go.
Well, I'm glad you're smart enough to watch time because I am not.
Oh, man. Well, you're the first of three interviews today, so we got to keep it going. Jason, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Oh, my
word. It has been a blast.
Yeah.
It has been a blast. I had a good time.
Listen, especially since me and my dad are going to schedule time to be on your show, let the people know again about your show so they can tune in and hear that other side of my life that I don't talk about.
And actually get introduced to Jason's show and
sure.
Listen. You
know? I'm trying to do some sales here.
You even get to meet my wife, too, because, you know, she's the better half.
Usually the case.
It's Foster Care, an Unparalleled Journey, and you find it all at fostercarenation.com. And anybody with any interest or questions, there's a spot on there. You can email me or whatever. If you have a story, somebody has a story they want to tell about being a parent, you know, foster parent, or having, we've talked to people who've had their kids taken into foster care and lost their kids or got them back. I mean, every story, any part of that, it's what we talk about because it's where our passion truly lies.
Awesome, man.
Very cool.
Awesome. And tune in to Forged in Fire if you want to see Jason's face.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, they were looking for pretty faces when they found me. And they went, man, somebody screwed up.
You do look like a blacksmith, though. You fit the part. When you said you're a blacksmith, like, yeah, you look like a blacksmith. Yep, you look, you
most
know,
definitely.
Yeah, like somebody that could make a sword and I wouldn't want to mess with. So,
amen.
Anyways, man, it's been great talking to you.
Same here, guys. It's been good to talk.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please go ahead and share the show with your friends. We don't care where or how you share the show. Just share the freaking show if you enjoyed it, because that's the best thing you can do to help the show grow. And it's free. Free. Doesn't cost you anything. So just share the freaking show. All right? Cool. Hey, listen, friends. Go ahead and check out Jason's podcast. Hit subscribe. Leave a little happy review. That's always appreciated amongst us podcasting people. If you just give those little smiley faces in the reviews and say, Tony Merkel sent me here, that's what we're talking about. Listen, until next week, friends, we really love you. And keep the hammer down in the hammer lane. Hit it, Dad.
Okay, son.